In Buddhist teachings, there are three Dhamma seals. They are impermanence, non-self, and nirvana. Any teaching that does not bear one of these seals cannot be said to be a true teaching of the Buddha. No, I have not become a Buddhist, nor am I pretending to be a Buddhist. I clearly see myself as a theist that leans toward Christian mysticism and the teachings of Jesus. So that hasn't changed. But I came upon this book that changed me in some ways, and I thought that I wanted to share it with you. The title of the book is The Heart of the Buddhist Teaching by Thich Nhat Hanh. As Thich Nhat Hanh always does for me, the book captured my attention and helped clarify the three dhammas for me. No, it's not. Pam just clued me in. Duh. Let me back up. I won't do this. I'll go to the meditation, which is real short. I'm not what happens to me. I am what I choose to become. Period. Now we're going to have the offering and the offering music. Pam and Jim, thank you.
We don't do this.
Yeah, I don't know why I jumped, but I jumped.
Sharing a memory of gray and white.
My apologies to Pam and Jim. I'm sorry I jumped space here. I'm just going to pick up where I left off. The book that captured my imagination so much is called The Heart of the Buddhist Teaching by Thich Nhat Hanh. And he, as an author, as he always does, catches my attention. And he helped me to understand the three dharmas more clearly. I'm going to talk this morning about the first of these three dharma seals, which is called impermanence. And then, at the end of the morning, I'm going to try and slide over into what non-self is. The Buddha taught that everything is impermanent. Everything. Flowers, tables, mountains, political regimes, our bodies, feelings, perceptions, and even consciousness. Anything that is permanent has never, ever been found. Flowers, for example, decompose. But knowing this does not prevent us from loving flowers. In fact, we tend to love flowers more because we know to treasure them more sincerely while they're still alive. In this way, as impermanence is revealed to us, when the flower dies, we don't suffer. Also in this way, impermanence is more than an idea. It's a practice to help us deal with reality. Is there anything in this teaching that has to do with our lives and our difficulties that we face from day to day? I think so. I believe so. If we see impermanence as merely philosophy only, it is not the Buddhist teaching. When we look carefully into impermanence, we see that things change because of causes and conditions, and they change. We begin to notice that everything is possible only because of the existence of everything else. Understanding impermanence can give us confidence and peace, even joy. Impermanence does not always have to lead to suffering. Consider this. Without impermanence, life could not be. Without impermanence, your daughter or son could not grow up to be a beautiful and competent young lady, or your son a remarkable young man. We need to learn to appreciate the value of impermanence. Thanks to it, we can change suffering into joy. For example, the first time I ate a lemon butter cookie, I thought I had found bliss. I had discovered love in a package. Passion was truly present, and the concept of yumminess was born. After that, I learned to make lemon butter cookies for myself. And my secret was lemon zest, more of it. I would mix the ingredients all together in a big bowl, prepare the batter, and then I'd place each cookie onto a cookie sheet using a wooden spoon. I imagine that the moment each cookie leaves the bowl of dough and it's placed onto the tray, it begins to think of itself as separate. Me, the creator of the cookies, knew better. And I discovered I had a lot of compassion for the cookies. I understood that these cookies are originally all one. And that even now, the happiness of each cookie is still the happiness of all the other cookies. But the cookies have developed discriminative perception. And suddenly, the cookies set up barriers between themselves. When I put them in the oven, they began to talk to one another. Get out of my way. I want the middle. I'm brown and beautiful. And you, well, you're ugly. Can you please spread a little more in that direction? Slow down, slow down. You're baking too fast. We all have a tendency to behave in this way. and it causes a lot of pain and a lot of suffering. If we know how to touch our non-discriminating mind, our happiness and the happiness of others will increase abundantly. We all have the capacity of living with non-discriminating wisdom, but we have to train ourselves to see in this way, to see that the flower is us, the mountain is us, our parents and children are all in us. Just as the molecules in this water that I sat here this morning have changed in the amount of water in my glass, you have breathed in some of those molecules already and have exhaled some of them while you've been sitting here. We are much like the cookies, thinking we are separate and opposing each other, when actually we're all the same in reality. This is the teaching of non-self or inner being. When we understand that everyone and everything belongs to the same stream of life, our suffering will decrease. What makes us suffer as we do is because we want and think we need things to be permanent when they're not permanent. We need to live the inside of non-self and to appreciate the value of impermanence. Most of the time we think of being born comes from nothing, then we become something. We travel from no one to someone, from non-being to being. We often think to die means we suddenly go from something to nothing, from someone to no one. But the Buddha said, there is no birth, there is no death, no being, and no non-being. And he offered us impermanence, non-self, and inner being. Look at this sheet of paper. You think it belongs to the realm of being? After all, here it is. I can fold it, I can fly it, I can bite it, I can burn it. But before this sheet of paper was born, was it nothing? Was it? Can nothing be something? Before this piece of paper was recognizable as a sheet of paper, it was a tree, it was a branch, it was sunshine, it was clouds, it was the earth. And in its former life, this piece of paper was all these things. This sheet of paper is much like our own lives. Before we were born, we already were in our mother and our father and all our ancestors. The clone, the Buddha's clone, what was your face before your parents were born? Is an invitation to look deeply into identifying ourselves in time and space. We usually think we did not exist before our parents. That's generally what we all think, that we only began to exist before the time of our parents, that we began to exist at the moment of our birth. But we were here before in many forms. The day of our birth is only our day of our continuation. And when we sing happy birthday, we should be singing happy continuation. It's a challenge for Jim and Pam. According to the teachings of Buddha, life is compared to a river. It is a progressive moment, a succession of series of different moments, kind of joining each other together, hooking up to one another to give the impression of one continuous flow, much like a drawing, starting with a dot on an empty page, the dot being where the pencil first touches the paper. And then you push the dot into a line, and then the line into a shape, and the form is then suggested with shadow and light, and finally a representation of reality where once there was an empty page, So you might have a cup, person's portrait, tree, whatever you've selected to draw. Moving from cause to cause, effect to effect, one point to another, one state of consciousness and existence to another, and giving the outward impression that it is one continuous and unifying movement, when in reality, it's not that at all. It's a fake. It's an impression. The river of yesterday is not the same river as today. The river of this moment is not going to be the same as the river in the next moment. The same is true with life. It changes continuously, becomes something or another from moment to moment. Take, for example, the life of an individual. It is a fallacy to believe that a person would remain the same person during his entire life. He changes every moment. He actually lives and dies but for a moment, or lives and dies moment by moment, as each moment leads to the next. A person is what he is in the context of the time in which he exists. It is an illusion to believe that the person you have seen just now, perhaps just hugged a few moments ago, is the same person you are seeing, or the person whom you're seeing now will be the same person that you'll see in a few moments at coffee hour. We change that fast, that quick. Even from a scientific point of view, this still is true. We all know that divisions take place in the living being continuously. One cell in our body dies and yields place to another continuously. To the new ones that are forming, it's always present. It's always rotating. Like the waves in a sea, every moment, many thoughts arise and die in each of us. Psychologically and physically, we are never the same all the time. Technically speaking, no individual is ever composed of the same amount of energy. The mental stuff and cellular material is never the same all the time. He is subject to change, and change is that continuous movement that I keep referring to. Impermanence and change are thus the undeniable truth of our existence. What is real is the existing moment, this moment, the present that is a product of the past or a result of previous causes and actions. Because of ignorance, an ordinary mind conceives these things all to be a part of one continuous reality. But in truth, they are not. The seed is not the tree, though it produces the tree. And the fruit is also not the tree, even though it is produced by the tree. Therefore, I hope I might have challenged us this morning, including myself, to think about these things, for it is no longer the morning that we started with today. Thanks. We're going to have a hymn now, I think. Is that right, you guys? 326. 326. Let all the beauty we have known.